From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. You can get that on your downloads, your app store, Google Play Store, Apple App Store. Look for the Odyssey app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Once it's downloaded, look for WILK News Radio. Then you just follow. That's it. That's all you have to do. Listen, try it for a couple weeks. You don't like it? Delete the app. But, I mean, if you have an iPhone or one of those other fancy phones, there's plenty of room for apps. We can always have another app, right? So try it. Give it a shot. Like I said, it's free. Podcast, we got you covered there. Anywhere you get your favorite podcast, you just search The Rob O'Donnell Show. And smart speakers, just ask those little suckers to play WILK News Radio. Looking at some text messages coming in. Somebody said it's Kimmel, not Kimball. I thought I said Kimmel. Maybe you just heard it wrong. Maybe I didn't. Who knows? If that's what you got out of that, then I don't know what to tell you. Let me see. Late night hosts are not really funny. That's why Colbert lost his job. Listen, ever since Jay Leno was okay, I watch Johnny Carson reruns all the time. I believe it's on MeTV. And I really still, to this day, get a kick out of Johnny Carson. And watching The Tonight Show, it was really a lot behind it. You know, when they tried to cut his orchestra, he took a pay cut to help pay for them, to keep them. We don't have that anymore. There's just not that anymore. Somebody said, dude, I don't know what job sites you've been on lately. There are a lot of scummy drug addicts in the trades and immigrants. Well, I don't know what kind of trades people you're hiring or job sites you're going to, but most of the people I know that I grew up with that have their businesses have it on point. And, you know, just because you work in that type of work doesn't mean you're a tradesperson. Listen, there are plenty of people that say they're something that they're truly not, but you're real plumbers, you're real electricians, you're real pipe fitters, you're real welders. The people know who they are pretty quickly, and they're all on point, or else they wouldn't be in business anymore. So I'm just not going to lump them into that kind of pile. Somebody said being a plumber isn't the problem with Mark; it's him wanting to physically fight at a Senate hearing. That kind of mentality fits the Trump administration. Look up the video. I don't need to look up the video. Actually, I applaud that. He was talking to the head of the Teamsters, and they're actually very good friends now and just did a podcast together. Yes, two alpha males got into it at a Senate hearing, and he did stand up and said, hey, you want to go? Right here. And maybe if more people did that, little weasels would shut up with big mouths and nothing else. So, yeah, I don't fault him for that. You know, he was dealing with someone who understands that language, and that's how he talked to him. So, okay, I don't have any problem with that. I think our world would be a better place if more people got punched in the face when they were kids, but some of them, since they haven't, now are adults that should be punched in the face. Not that I'm recommending that, but I'm just saying they should be. I've worked in the trades for 30 years, but okay, you know better, a radio host with soft hands. Okay. Obviously, you don't know what I did for a living, so soft hands, far from it. And as far as tradespeople in Congress, somebody said you're right about tradespeople in Congress. Listen, our forefathers were mostly tradespeople. That's who they, when they wrote our founding documents, that who was supposed to be running our country. People in the trades, carpenters, farmers, tobacco farmers. That's who was supposed to be running. And you were supposed to go there for a few years, do your part in service to government, and then move on. Go back to your business. Go back to your families. Go back to your lives. We've gotten away from that. Look at our founding fathers and what they did for a living. Look at the first members of Congress and what they did for a living. It's easy enough to search it up. It's easy enough to search up. That's who was meant to be running our country. Everyday people who worked the trades, blue-collar workers who lived off the land. It's just astounding that we have lifelong politicians. Like, so much so, we're wheeling them in. Oh, crazy. Crazy indeed. Again, we have our governor, Josh Shapiro. We have Democrats, again, solving problems that don't exist, accomplishing nothing but imaginary pats on their own back. It's crazy. The governor, yesterday afternoon, went on a whole social media frenzy. Breaking, this is from the governor of Pennsylvania, breaking, the Pennsylvania House just passed a bill that codified marriage equality into law in Pennsylvania. And they did it with broad bipartisan support. Here in Pennsylvania, we believe in your freedom to marry who you love. Today, the House has stepped up to protect that right. Well, here's the thing. This is already protected federally in many levels. Under Supreme Court ruling, Obergefell versus Hodges in 2015 and the Respect for Marriage Act. 2022. In short, the U.S. Supreme Court held that the 14th Amendment requires all states to license marriages between two people of the same sex and to recognize same-sex marriages lawfully performed in other states. This made same-sex marriages legal nationwide, giving same-sex couples the same rights and responsibilities as opposite-sex couples under state and federal law. Democrats again are solving problems that don't exist, accomplishing nothing but imaginary pats on their own back. And the way he puts, here in Pennsylvania, we believe in your freedom to marry who you love. And today the House stepped up to protect that right. That right's not in jeopardy. It was already protected federally, which mandates every state follow that. So he's literally making these things up to make them look like they did something. From members, of course it passed with broad bipartisan support. It's already been done federally by law. This is symbolic at best. Symbolic at best. And you know what else? And he started this when he was attorney general. Today, Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled the mandatory life sentences without possibility of parole for second-degree murder are unconstitutional. So if somebody kills your family member, but they're charged only convicted with second-degree murder, putting them in jail for life. Now, they took your family member away forever. And they just happened to be convicted. Now, a lot of people charged with first-degree murder get a plea or get convicted of second-degree murder. Well, our Supreme Court, which is why these, you know, remember those questions, let's retain these justices? Very important. They ruled that mandatory life sentences without the possibility of parole is unconstitutional. And Josh Shapiro went on to say, I have long believed this law is unjust and wrong. As governor, I took legal action in this case, arguing to strike down the sentencing framework. Common sense and true justice dictate that we need different penalties for different conduct. For example, a getaway driver shouldn't get the same sentence as the person who pulls the trigger. Per the Supreme Court order, it is now time for the General Assembly to act and come up with a thoughtful, just process to address those who are serving life sentences for second-degree murder. So Governor Josh Shapiro believes someone responsible for taking your loved one away forever deserves a second chance, does not deserve to spend life in prison. And again, mind you, most people charged with first-degree murder either plea down or get convicted of second-degree murder. So they can take your loved one away forever, but they don't deserve to spend forever in prison. As your governor, someone who has aspirations of presidency. Wonder if he would have felt the same if that ever happened to him. It's easy to make these decisions and think this way when you don't know what it's like to have a loved one taken from you. Thankfully, most of us don't know that, but there are some that do. And the mere fact that somebody could take your loved one away forever, but they don't deserve to spend forever in jail, just doesn't make sense to me. If you could make it make sense, try. I'm all ears. It's 421 here at WILK. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show. Just catching up on some text messages here. Some of them I don't even understand. Listen, if you're going to start drinking early, stay off the text messages. I get it. Here's a couple of things. The runway at LaGuardia Airport, I believe, has been reopened, the second runway. Now, there's only two runways at LaGuardia Airport. It's like a modified T, and that's how a lot of those airports run. And it's one of the busiest airports in America. They were able to remove the debris from that runway through that Air Canada and emergency vehicle crash that took place. I was speaking to some friends who were at the scene in the emergency management section of that investigation. One of the things that really not being talked about but really played a key pivotal role here is the fact that that was an emergency foam truck. The fire trucks at the airports are they have a special mixture that shoots foam instead of water. They just do not use water because they're dealing with JP6 fuel, airline fuel. So they have to fight it in different ways. And the fact that these vehicles are bigger, they're heavier, they have an internal mixing system that uses this. But the fact that this plane crashed into one of those vehicles, basically rupturing the foam and water systems in this vehicle, basically, and if you watch the video, you can kind of see it, basically shot foam and water mixture everywhere, which helped suppress any residual fire that took place. Now, again, this was the plane is said to be have gone just over 100 miles an hour. I believe it was 105 was the official estimate at this point. And when it slammed into this fire truck that was going about 20 miles an hour crossing the runway. And I do have a diagram of LaGuardia Airport. And one of the things that I think is going to be addressed or at least talked about through the investigation is where the fire station is in the airport. The only way for the fire trucks to get to any of the terminals is to cross an active runway. Now, they do have procedures for this. As you can hear when you listen to the audio, the Truck One fire response said that they wanted permission to cross the one runway. The air traffic controller gave them permission to cross the runway. They confirmed that we are crossing the runway. We have permission. And then as they proceeded, the air traffic controller caught that this was a fatal error, tried to stop that truck, but again, it was too late. Again, you have the truck pulling out. These trucks don't stop on a dime. It was doing 20 miles an hour, and airplanes coming in, landing already touched down on the ground, so it couldn't go around. Was going about 100 miles an hour, and I think they landed about 140 when they touched down, 130 miles an hour when they touched down. So, and struck this vehicle. But the fact that this vehicle was T-boned by the airline, unfortunately killing both the pilot and the co-pilot and ejecting who sits right behind them in the main cabin, the air crew, the flight crew, who was ejected the length of a football field and miraculously, and again, giving the accident, I say only suffered a fractured leg, still strapped to her jump seat is just a miracle. But one of the things that I'm being told is the fact that this was, in fact, a fire truck. This was one of those foam vehicles is a big point to there not being a big fire with this. Now, again, it was the front of the aircraft that hits. A lot of the fuel are in the wings and in the midsection. But still, if you look at the violence of this accident, and I have put the video out there after the fact. It's just incredible that this happened. But that plane has now been moved to a hangar for further investigation. The emergency vehicle was uprighted and also towed to an area for the investigation. They do finally have full staffing to investigate this because they were themselves having trouble getting to LaGuardia Airport because of TSA delays. They had investigators that were on lines in Houston Airport where the head of the FAA had to call and have them escorted to get on a flight so they could get them moving here to this location. And it just goes for another reason we got to get this government open. It's just as simple as that. They really have to do something here. But the close-up images of that have been put out there now of this accident, it's just amazing that more weren't injured. Now, both emergency police and fire personnel received injuries. I really haven't gotten a status on them. Most of the people injured who went to the hospital have been discharged from the hospital, as per reports. Roughly 40 people, including the flight attendant, who miraculously survived, flung 300 feet, were injured. But all will be okay thanks to these two pilots who were being told made some evasive maneuvers that lessened. They said they hard hit the brakes when they did see the fire truck pulling out in front of them. Two Port Authority officers who were inside the fire truck also miraculously survived without life-threatening injuries. So that's great to hear. But there are high image pictures that are now put out showing the entire nose, most of it missing, and it basically sheared off. And the fire truck pretty much almost cut in half. So that just goes to show the violence of this and the fact that most people who were injured on this flight have already been released. It's just amazing. It's just amazing. Again, a lot of credit to the, unfortunately, two deceased pilots who did take action before lessening the speed and the damage of this accident. It's 3:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes in law enforcement who made the ultimate sacrifice on this day, March 26th, throughout the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And that is proudly brought to you by Isabella Restaurant right here, Route 315 in Pittston. And we appreciate their sponsorship of this honor. We're going to start today with Assistant Chief of Police Ralph Jacob Fox of Catawissa Borough Police Department in 1962. He was struck and killed by a vehicle on Mill Street at approximately 7:30 p.m. He and the police chief were investigating a theft of tires in the area and had parked on Mill Street to speak to the magistrate at his home. Assistant Chief Fox stepped from the vehicle and began to cross the road when he was struck by an oncoming car. We have policeman Henry Clay Lomas, Philadelphia Police Department in 1925. He was also struck by an automobile while on duty at 15th Street and Ridge Avenue. He was taken to Hahnemann Hospital, where he succumbed to his injuries a week later. He was a 37-year veteran of the force, and he was 78 years old. Wow. Spent 37 years with the Philadelphia Police Department. Patrolman Henry Clay Lomas. And again, that was 1925. And Police Officer Charles Barnes, Philadelphia Police Department in 1919. He died as a result of complications from the Spanish influenza while performing his assigned duties during the pandemic. Due to the devastation of the pandemic, Philadelphia police districts were used as makeshift hospitals. Police officers were ordered to fill and deliver prescriptions, act as pallbearers of victims, placard homes, collect victims' bodies from their homes, and assist doctors and health officials to ensure the establishments were closed and following guidelines to stop the spread of the pandemic. That was 1919 on this day. And those are our three from here in Pennsylvania. And again, I truly thank our friends at Isabella Restaurant here on Route 315 up in Pittston. It's a great place. If you've never been there, give it a try. From their lunches to their dinners, this is a great place to take someone for a special event. It's a great place to go for a business lunch. It's casual. It's upper casual. It's just they hit it all. But the food is the key there. I've been there a few times, and it's just outstanding. I've been to an event there. They also have a great event space that is truly something to see. So keep them in mind. And again, you have a business lunch. You want to go there for a quick meal or something. It's Isabella Restaurant Route 315 here in Pittston. And again, I appreciate them sponsoring and recognizing our first responders and heroes, especially the ones who've made the ultimate sacrifice. Each day when I do this piece, the pictures and the stories of these heroes go up on my Facebook page so you could see and read their stories more, find out a little bit more about them. I kind of give you an overview here, but there's a lot more. It shows a picture of their department patch and a picture of them if available. I believe today, I don't think there's any pictures of them, just a picture of the patch. But it does go into a little more detail of the story behind the men and women who have made the ultimate sacrifice in law enforcement here in the Commonwealth. And I just picked the ones from here in Pennsylvania. Each day, there's over 100 throughout our nation who made the ultimate sacrifice each day from all around the nation and our territories. And to go through that list to pick out the ones from Pennsylvania, I get a small humbling of how many make that sacrifice each and every day. And that goes on to this day where, you know, we lose 100 plus a year across our nation each and every day, unfortunately. So we'll continue to bring that to you. And again, our thanks to Isabella Restaurant for sponsoring that for us. It's 4:40 here at WILK. Time for 2020 Traffic and Weather Together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's time for Today in History, because how do we know where we're going unless you remember where we've been? And if you know a first responder, if you are a first responder, you're going to want to stay tuned. I got something for after this piece that you may be interested in. So hang in there, just a couple minutes. And if you know a first responder, tell them to start to listen. So March 26th. Let's see what we have for today. 1872, Yosemite becomes a state park. Yosemite National Park was designated as California's first state-controlled park, an early step of the U.S. conservation movement. In 1917, Seattle Metropolitans win the Stanley Cup. The Seattle Metropolitans become the first American team to win the Stanley Cup, marking a milestone in U.S. hockey. Until this year's Olympics, baby. Ha, ha, ha. Oh, let me see. Spinach gets its day in 1937. The National Spinach Day is celebrated. Shh, don't tell Mrs. O'Donnell that. I'll have a whole plate of spinach when I get home. National Spinach Day is celebrated, yes, inspired in part by no other than Popeye, who helped boost spinach consumption across America, 1937. 1945, the Battle of Iwo Jima near its ends. The Battle of Iwo Jima officially concluded around this time after weeks of intense fighting in the Pacific Theater. 1953, Jonas Salk announces polio vaccine success. Jonas Salk announced a major breakthrough in developing the polio vaccine, one of the most important public health advances in U.S. history, 1953. 1971, East Pakistan declares independence. While global, the U.S. closely monitored the crisis that led to the creation of Bangladesh, influencing Cold War diplomacy. 1979, Egypt-Israel peace treaty signed. The U.S. played a central role as Jimmy Carter hosted the signing of this landmark Middle East agreement. 1982, groundbreaking of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. Construction begins on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C., honoring those who served in Vietnam. 1997, the Heaven's Gate mass suicide discovered. Authorities uncovered one of the most shocking cult tragedies in U.S. history involving the Heaven's Gate in California. In 2012, Supreme Court hears Affordable Care Act argument. The Supreme Court of the United States began historic hearings on the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. Some Pennsylvania history today. 1783, Pennsylvania abolishes slavery. The Gradual Act anniversary context. The Gradual Abolition Act of 1780 continued to shape policy discussion into the 1780s, with late March legislative activity reinforcing its implementation. 1827, the first railroad charter of PA. Pennsylvania continued expanding early rail system around this time, setting the stage for Pennsylvania Railroad, which would become one of the largest in the world. In 1863, Civil War mobilization in Pennsylvania. As the American Civil War intensified, Pennsylvania regiments were actively organizing and deploying at this time. Still continuing the anthracite coal region labor activity, especially in northeast Pennsylvania, including areas near Scranton. So ongoing labor tensions and organized efforts during the Great Depression. 1979, Three Mile Island crisis started to develop. 2 days before the partial meltdown, warning signs were emerging at Three Mile Island and near Harrisburg, one of the most significant nuclear incidents in U.S. history. And that's what we have today in history for March 26th. Let me tell you, and again, first responders, pay attention here. Yesterday, I talked about our friends over at Monk Heating and Air Conditioning. And if you're getting a new installation by Monk Heating and Air Conditioning, if you are a veteran or active duty military, you get a discount, a pretty nice discount on your new installation. So when you're talking to them, when they're walking you through what you should get for your house, because they are the experts, listen to them, I'm telling you. I got that Mitsubishi electric heat pump system installed, man, and they are Mitsubishi Diamond Elite contractors. This thing is unbelievable. I love it. And I had some listeners reach out the other day in a message to me and said that they got the same unit that I got. And I'm like, well, how did you know the unit I got? And Mug told us this is the same unit that Rob O'Donnell got. And they said, thank you for recommending it. It works great. And because we are veterans, they gave us this discount. And they told me how much the discount was, and it was substantial. So I got talking to our friends over at Monk Heating Air Condition, Rob Monk and his team over there, and they are going to extend this to our first responders. So if you are police, fire, or EMS, and you're getting a new system installed by Monk Heating and Air Conditioning, you will get the same discount that our veterans and active duty military get. Listen, this is hundreds of dollars, depending on the unit you get. So I am gratefully thankful from Monk Heating and Air Conditioning for extending this discount to our first responders, because they realize how much you do as well. And you know I know how much you do. And our veterans and our military, listen, Monk Heating and Air Conditioning not only have spouses of veterans that work there, but our veterans themselves that are part of the company. So listen, 365-day, 24/7 service, cool club maintenance plans, water heaters same day. They, are, like I said, are Mitsubishi Diamond Elite contractors. They're also trained premier comfort specialists if essential systems more of your speed. And if you're dealing with Jim, Rob, Taylor, or Lauren, the Monk family, their name stands behind everything they do, because their name's on everything they do, on every vehicle, on every piece of paper you get. If you're looking to upgrade your system, if you're looking to add a system like I did, listen, this is an addition to what I normally had. This didn't replace anything, but I have leaned on this system more than I have any other system this entire winter, and it's been the coldest winter that we've had in 30 years. So, you know, I appreciate Monk Heating and Air Conditioning. It's because of the relationship I have with such a great company that I've been able to talk to them and say, hey, this is the feedback I got from a company. Do you think you guys can open this up to our first responders? Absolutely was the word that I got from them. So again, nice, substantial discount for our veterans, for our active duty military, for our police, for our fire and EMS, now our first responders at Monk Heating and Air Conditioning. So if you're looking for anything to do with your heating and air conditioning needs, any HVAC need you need, contact our friends at Monk Heating and Air Conditioning. That's monkhvac.com, monkhvac.com. It's hard to interrupt Rush. Come on, isn't it? Of course it is. Welcome back. So I have some great news for our first responders from Monk Heating and Air Conditioning, wasn't it? I was so pleased when they said absolutely to that discount for our heroes out there. So Luzerne County Council voted 6-5 Tuesday night to reject a motion to remove Councilman John Lombardo from the county commission that reviews plans to spend opioid settlement funds after Lombardo made an emotional case to stay on the commission. Now, Councilman Chris Bellis said he wanted to remove Lombardo because the Commission on Opioid Misuse and Addiction Abatement was holding private meetings and failed to publicly disclose meeting minutes and agendas. Bellis added Lombardo, one of the lone members, the lone member of council on the commission, wasn't updating other council members on commission business. This is the people's government, and they deserve to see what's going on. And when things happen behind closed doors, not publicly and in back rooms, I'm not saying corruption happened here, but I'm saying it lends corruption a helping hand, Bellis said. Now, Lombardo argued he should remain on the commission. He talked about the death of a close cousin who lost her battle with addiction, provided vivid descriptions of personal experiences seeing drug overdoses in Pittston City Fire and Emergency Medical Pittston Fire and Emergency Medical Technician. County Manager Romilda Caracamo said that she was responsible for the commission not posting meeting minutes and agendas, and she added, the commission should have informed council of decisions to reject requests for opioid funding. According to the ordinance, the commission members are the district attorney, director of drug and alcohol agency, human service division head, correctional service division head, the county manager, and one member of county council and one county citizen. Now, Tuesday's voting agenda included a motion to remove Lombardo from the commission and the motion appointing council chairman Jimmy Sabatino to the commission. Council did not vote on the motion to appoint Sabatino after rejecting the motion to remove Lombardo. The council members who voted to keep Lombardo on the commission were Lombardo, Sabatino, Dawn Simmons, Steve Coslett, Harry Haas, and Leanne McDermott. The council members who voted to remove Lombardo were Bellis, Williams, Joanna Bryan-Smith, Patty Krasnowski, and Brittany Stevenson. Smith requested a special meeting with Opioid Commission members to discuss what has been happening. That was an interesting divide of that vote when it came to this. Lombardo said the attempt to remove him from the Opioid Commission was a political hatchet job. Lombardo, a Republican who served as county chairman in 2024 and 2025 when council had a 7-4 Republican majority, council now has an 8-3 Democrat majority. I'm appalled by the treatment that I have received, by the lack of just pure human decency, Lombardo said. Now, the votes were a mixed Republican and Democrat to keep him. March 10th, the council tabled a resolution to allocate $224,000 from opioid litigation settlement fund after council members expressed concerns about the recommendation process. And Councilwoman Denise Williams requested the council discuss how the Opioid Commission operates at the next work session. So transparency is good. We'll see that they get their answers they're needed, or else I'm sure they'll just hold another vote and change it. It's 5 o'clock here at WILK.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.